Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
And I'm Mike Carroll.
Mike Carroll, introduce yourself. Who are you?
I am a strength and conditioning coach specializing in golf. Anybody who does know who I am would know me by my business name, Fit for Golf. That's my website, my brand, I guess. So yeah, I have particular interest in physical training and how it influences our golf game is as short a version as I can give.
So we're here to talk about practice and specifically some of the info and studies and ideas and misconceptions perhaps about random practice, block practice, variable practice, all kinds of different practice. A lot of studies out there are block practice is bad. The people that we have do block practice don't get much better, and you should do a lot of random practice. And Mike, what's one of the biggest flaws that you see in some of those studies?
Yeah, I should probably have included that I'm joining this episode in a non-professional capacity, more as an interested golfer and someone who is
put in the work and done some practice, and someone who has looked at some of these studies. And
yeah, and I do have some experience like coaching in other sports, and like I have a degree in sports and exercise science, so the topics aren't completely alien to me. But I'm not I'm not making a living advising people on how to practice. I'll put it that way. But yeah, like to answer your question, and this applies to a lot of different areas of, I guess, sports science, is that we definitely can and should use research for helping us make our decisions, but we need to be very careful being tied to them and understand that there is commonly limitations in studies. It doesn't mean that they're worthless or we shouldn't follow them. It means that we need to kind of look into them and maybe dig a little bit deeper. And kind of, I guess, common limitations in this type of research and others is that they tend to be done over very short periods, potentially with small sample sizes and with populations that might not represent the golfers that you are trying to help. So probably the most, I would say, common limitation in a random versus block practice study scenario is the length of the intervention. That would be quite short. And this is no fault of the research groups that are planning these things. You can't exactly tell a group of golfers, hey, we're gonna track this practice for the next 6 months. You know, check in every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. That's just not how things work. So oftentimes these might be one session. They might be multiple sessions. But it's usually a maximum of a few weeks. And like Eric, as we touched on, I think something that's very important for golfers to consider when they're thinking about their improvements and maybe organizing their practice. Am I trying to score as well as I can in this Saturday's round? Or am I thinking about the player I might be in 3 years or 5 years? That would be one, I think, kind of key thing to think about when you're trying to interpret, you know, how these studies may guide your practice design.
Yeah. So if I might summarize that, a lot of the studies are done over 4 weeks or 8 weeks, and that's not a long enough time for someone who's kind of doing, and we'll get into the differences between block practice done by good golfers is often not actually block practice. It looks like block practice. We'll get into some of that later on, but over 4 weeks, that might not be enough time for someone that's doing quote unquote block practice to actually show much improvement, because they're still going slowly. They're still exaggerating some things. It's still fairly new to them.
Yeah. So if we're going to think about a potentially 4 week training intervention, I think the time frame is something that you need to consider there. You mentioned it may not be long enough for someone who's doing block practice and doing exaggerated feels or working on their technique and things like that. That is one important element of it, because how the block practice is designed may be very different to what you would prescribe as block practice. And one of the things I think we talked about a lot of what we were going to get into, and it's almost like the bigger focal point for this whole discussion, is block and random are terms that are far too vague to describe all the different things that golfers may be doing. The point I was actually going to make about 4 weeks studies or shorter and looking at the results that golfers get, that's also where the periodization of your practice or training gets very important. And it goes back to the point I made, like, are we trying to peak for a certain season or event, or are we very far away from needing to perform and we're trying to develop skills that we may not yet possess? And I actually draw a lot of parallels in that. It's a slightly different world, but like physical training is very similar. You have almost general preparation where you're upgrading your capabilities, but then you need to have very specific focus for the event you're actually going to be competing in. And I think there's a lot of parallels with that in development for getting better at golf, basically.
Yeah, I would say as a coach, giving a lesson to players, those are two very different lessons. You know, a player who's trying to peak at a certain time because they have an event coming up in a couple of weeks, or, you know, that player that says, hey, I'm here to be better for next season. Those are very different lessons, obviously.
Yeah. And I got a couple of students that we've been working the entire winter through, and they've got about a month left until their golf season kicks in. And the next two weeks, the practice plan is basically changing over from super block, just technical work, to then starting to move it into like, yeah, now we're starting to hit some shots. But obviously, like what you guys were talking about, when people stare at someone on the range and they look like they're hitting the same shot over and over again, I'm sure we're going to dive into this. That might be block practice look like, but then it's super random inside them trying to like hit the shot or get their feel, because again, it's so random in itself. So when you see somebody on the range hitting shots, you have to ask them, like, what are you trying to do? You know what I mean? Like, because they might be doing something completely different in their mind than you're seeing.
Yeah, so let's get into that. Oftentimes, when we had Dr. Raymond Pryor on, partly in the show, but mostly after the show, I described a situation and he said, well, that's not block practice, even though to someone else it would look like block practice, because I was saying, well, someone's just hitting a six iron repeatedly. They look like they're doing the same rehearsals, trying to do the same move, but really they're changing the pace at which they do it. They're changing how much they exaggerate the one thing they're working on trying to do. They're changing little bits here and there. They're kind of experimenting. They're failing in slightly different ways all the time and learning the whole time. He's like, well, that's variable practice. That's not block practice. Yeah. But to someone else, like what you said, they see that person on the range and they're like, oh, that guy's just hitting the same club in the same direction. That's block practice. What's block practice, Mike? What is actual block practice? And how often do people actually do straight block practice?
Yeah, so I think like the definition of block practice would be where there's no variation at all between repetitions would be the strict definition of it. Block practice, it's often termed mass practice as well. Like block practice technically is where you do a block of something and then you move on to something else and you may come back to that block. But I think almost a better way of looking at it is levels of variable, like they exist on a spectrum, block and random. And that's sort of what I was getting at the start, versus one over here and the other over there and then being completely divergent, one in good and one is bad. So I definitely think we should be looking at the how much or how little variation is involved in the practice that someone is doing, and how much the environment and the task reflects what they'll be doing when they're playing. And like all those things can be manipulated. What's interesting that we've gotten into so far is, and it's definitely the way it is in the golf world, is that everybody thinks mechanical training, block practice have to be done in the same way. But I think there's very simple ways that you can include variety in your mechanical practice or your block practice, if that's the kind of broad term you want to give it, that are beneficial. Because one thing that is certain is that variability is good for learning. And if we can include small bits of variability, it doesn't need to be extreme. That's probably better than doing the same thing over and over and over again. Like a kind of term you'll hear often in motor learning and skill acquisition. And I like it to a certain extent, and I think it makes it simple for people. The term is repetition without repetition. So rather than doing the exact same thing over and over again. And I think this is what we see with the, you know, inexperienced practicer on the range, where they're rifling through 25 six irons in, you know, 5 or 10 minutes or whatever. There's zero reflection. There's zero thought going into what's happening. There's no feedback. I think people associate that as being block practice and block practice being bad, but that's not really.
And that is bad practice. That's not good practice.
Of course it is. Yeah. But on the, you know, in conjunction with that, you could have someone changing club and target on every single shot and also practicing poorly. If there's zero reflection on what's going on, if they're just haphazardly whacking balls at different targets across the range, and if that golfer is hitting all of them 2 to 3 inches behind the ball, and there's no, you know, there's no change to try and do something different, that's not beneficial either, you know?
It's almost worse at times. And I think a lot of players just aren't disciplined enough. They might think that they're doing block practice when in reality, the whole thing is random because every swing has a different thought with a different intention. And but they're trying to do the same thing in a global sense, but you can find little small details that are different every single time because they're just not disciplined enough to have the reflection.
Yeah. So even in expert performers, they're going to have minute variation in all of their reps or trials. Like if you take whoever you want, like Scotty, Sam Snead, you know, if you were measuring them very closely, there would be minute variation in how they move to get the desired result. I think, and this isn't in golf.
But are they trying to make those minute variations or are they trying to do the same thing?
So I think they're probably making very, very micro adjustments based on the previous shot. So it's I would imagine it's very close to trying to do the same thing with mm-hmm. with almost, I don't want to say subconscious, but like if you take an expert practicer and, you know, let's say we give them 10 six irons to the 200 yard flag, even if you say like, don't do anything different, just hit these 10 balls at that flag, they're all going to make minor adjustments based on the shot they just hit. Now, if you're
right, if the wind's a little stronger than they think, they might open the face a little bit more or something. They yeah. grip or, it a little bit
if,
differently.
You know, if they get the feedback of, oh, that was fractionally thin or that was fractionally off the toe, they're going to make that slight adjustment. Where I think golfers get themselves into trouble a lot is they have an assumption that more volume or more repetitions of the same thing means that what they're working on gets ingrained more.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why they get into so much trouble, because there's no doubt that as you do something, if you do the same exact thing more and more and more, even if you are trying to stay engaged, the brain's definitely not going to be in a state where it's learning as well as if you include minor variation. So like an example that I think is helpful for this is, I completely understand when golfers are, or when coaches are helping golfers, let's say, improve their baseline technique. Like the golfer clearly does not possess the mechanics necessary to hit the shots they want. So they give them a drill, a swing feel to work on. It might be at, you know, Eric, we've done a lot of this. It might be at, you know, slightly slower speed. It might be with more of a focus on how a certain body part or the club is moving. Where I think golfers get into trouble with this is they think the more times in a row that they can do that, automatically that's how much improvement they'll make in that session. Whereas if they can step back and there's a couple of ways that they can increase the retention from this session, taking a little bit more time between shots, so there's a chance to reflect. So that's called spacing in motor learning. Like that helps a lot rather than going 3 seconds between balls. Simply switching clubs without changing the target line you're working on. Someone might have a practice station down. They don't want to be digging up the range, going left, right, you know, and having divots all over the place. Like instead of hitting 50 of your 8 iron in a row doing your drill, there's nothing stopping you from going pitching wedge, 8 iron, 6 iron in 3 ball rotations. And even that slight variation in the length and weight of the shaft, the lie angle, the loft on the face, like that's going to provide the variability that will help golfers absorb more of what they're doing and force them to go through the recall and adjustments necessary that are part of the benefit we get from random practice. So I think it's important that it's not just random is one shot going driver, flop shot, 7 iron high draw, 5 iron low cut. You know, practice punch out from the trees, go to the putting green, hole a 6 foot. Like, I think that's what people has to be included.
I love that.
In practice.
That guy's getting his steps in though.
And then, that's right. And then it's almost an assumption that block practice is the inexperienced practicer rifling through their basket or 4 baskets, doing the same thing over and over. And they said, no, I'm ingraining this move that my coach told me. Like neither of those are probably what we need. They're under certain buckets. And I think one of the big problems is that golf has struggled with is almost moving away from using these 2 buckets as the sole descriptors of practice and more thinking about in terms of spectrum, like how much variability do I want to include and how representative of scoring in golf do I want this to be? And like we said at the start, depending on where the golfer is in their development, and maybe where the golfer is in relation to their season, if it's a slightly more serious golfer, will dictate what they're doing.
And we've made the point that a lot of people will say, oh, well, when you're on the golf course, you get all kinds of lies and all kinds of situations and all kinds of stuff. You're not hitting off perfectly flat lies. You're not hitting off the same conditions all the time as what you find on the range. And you need to go put your ball on a side hill lie and a downhill lie and stuff like that. But you'll hit 32 full swings or so in a round of golf. You know, you'll hit 30 putts. You'll hit 32 full swings. You'll hit some chips, some distance wedges, some of those things. Out of those 32 shots, Mike, you and I have talked about how the fact that 18 of those are from a perfectly flat, fairly level lie off a tee box. So the majority of your full swing shots are still, even though people will say, oh, yeah, when you're on the golf course, most of those are off a flat level lie.
Yeah, which might be the most important shots you hit that round too.
Definitely. That,
right.
I think that brings up a really good point too, that I think experienced players have, you know, learned themselves, but you have between skill differences of how much variability is presented in golf. So if we break golf down into four main aspects, right? Driving, approach play, short game, putting. If we compare, let's say driving, if we're talking about hitting driver versus short game, the levels of variability that we're presented with on the golf course between those two skills is very different. So like, it strikes me as obvious that there's probably going to be slight differences in how we practice. Like
So when you're practicing driving, you should practice the same thing most of the time, all the time. And when you're doing wedges, vary it up quite a bit more.
That's what I think, because, okay, yeah. I completely, you know, buy into, even if we want to say hit, let's say the same shot with driver over and over, right? Not saying that we do, but like for the vast majority of cases, if you can hit the ball reasonably straight with your driver without a huge pile of curve, that plays in 95% of the tee shots you're going to hit with driver. All right.
Yep.
Now, even if that's what you want to achieve, I do think there is value in probably practicing, hey, maybe I should try hitting little fades. Maybe I should try hitting draws. If you're someone who tends to turn their little fade into a big slice, probably practicing hitting some draws or hooks might be helpful, right? But if we go to short game, I don't think there's any argument can be made that you should only practice one stock short game shot from a flat lie in the fairway, because you can't really do anything in short game but be presented with all these funky lies and slopes, simply because that's the way golf courses are designed. Around the greens, they have big undulations, they have banks of bunkers. So like, you're going to have to hit it really high from heavy grass. You're going to have to hit it out of sand. You're going to have to probably hit a little chip and run. So I think it's quite obvious that between these different parts of golf, it makes sense that they might be practiced differently, you know?
Yeah. Every 20-yard shot is a different shot. It's, you're not hitting the same 20-yard shot. Hopefully, again, we can get good enough with that driver off the tee to not curve it a ton, and it will play. And guys, as I sit here and I listen to this, and I think I saw a post, you know, Fit for Golf on Twitter last night, where somebody was asking a question about Justin Rose and the practice station he was hitting balls from. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about there, Mike, but you asked the question to the person, like, how many balls do you think he's hitting in that station? And the person's
like, I think, is what I say.
Before switching club, right? It's like the whole bucket. It's like, no way. There's no way he's hitting the whole bucket. Can you even, like, this, just this discussion, that's why this game is so hard. Like, there's so much variation in all that we're doing. Even when we're trying to do the same thing, there's so much, there's so many variables that make this game so difficult.
Yeah. I was listening to Greg Chalmers on his podcast, and they were talking about a little bit of like making some adjustments. And at one point he said, I mean, the second I hit one not in the middle of the club face, I'm making adjustments, and that's random, right? Like, you've hit one, I've already hit a different shot, and now you're making an adjustment to that. I don't think any amateur is trying to hit two bad shots in a row. So obviously that's in itself is some variation of practice. And then 100% into like short game, I'm like, our putting green chipping is right by our tee box, and you watch people warm up and they hit six balls to the same hole, and then they're like, yep, my chipping's, I'm good, I'm warmed up. It's like, you're never going to see that shot again.
Yeah.
that's all you did. Like,
Jason, the point you made there about, you know, Greg making an adjustment to his movement or whatever, or what he's trying to do with strike based on a shot, like, that's a perfect kind of example of why I'm trying to get at that. I think using random and block as the terms to label practice is too broad. So I was like doing a little bit of reading before this, and that was one of the kind of things I was trying to figure out. And one of the points I read was that, like, and this is like, depending on how technical or by the book you want to go, for block practice not to be block, the external constraint needs to change. So what the goal of the shot is, right? So that might be the six iron is a fade rather than a draw. And what you're talking about here is an internal constraint variation. So we're looking for the same outcome. Like he's hitting, let's just say 5-6 irons in a row. He wants to cluster them around this flag at 185 yards with the same shot shape, but he's changing what he's trying to do to make that happen. Now, what I was reading was saying by the book, this is still block practice, which I don't really care if it is or not, because I think it's clearly a very different learning experience for the golfer if they're having that moment of reflection between shots and thinking, okay, what just happened on that shot? What did it feel like? What am I going to try differently on this shot? And if they have the discipline to do that between shots, I think it's clearly much different to the person rifling through shots, even if they're both labeled block practice. I don't think that's the important part of helping people use their practice time better or improving their, you know, golf ability.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you think about those two people, we've got Greg on one side, and we've got, you know, Mr. Johnson out there that's just raking in balls. He's just hoping that the next ball is the better shot. He's not actually doing anything about it. And that's what, you know, when you're out practicing, you have to understand, I need some intent into like, okay, what is happening? Where's my feedback? Because that's how you're going to be able to make those small little changes to get the ball to fall on the target. Without that, yeah, you're just zombie range smashing and thinking that's going to make you a better golfer. It's not.
Are you saying hope's not a strategy? Is that what you're saying?
Hope is not a strategy.
Mike, do you have anything to leave us with?
No, not really. I was just going to add to Jason's point there. I think what he talked about there, the person like hoping to get better, that can happen if you're hitting at the same target with the same club.
Absolutely.
Or if you're changing club every time and moving around the range. Like if I think, like, you know, you guys have covered good practice, you know, habits and principles so much. I think probably the best thing that could happen from this podcast is that there's less arguments about whether block or random is better. And people actually just start thinking about like how they can use different types of practice to benefit them, maybe how they should balance them and even time them. Because like, I know you guys have been on like social media, the golf circles for a long time. Every time the block versus random argument comes up, which it has done a number of times over the last few years, you're just kind of banging your head that like people aren't really thinking about this thoroughly. And what they're arguing with the term block versus random is just so reductionist and limited that nobody really gets anywhere, you know?
Yep.
And there's so many details within both of those. Like it's probably time to almost stop using those terms and just expand out to what do I actually want you to do and why? Mm. Like it's almost like the label has such negative or positive connotations that we'd nearly be better off just dropping them and saying, this is what I'd like you to do. Why? And you know, let's go from there.
I can get behind that.
Yep.
Where can people find you, Mike?
At Fit for Golf. There's an underscore between the four and golf on Twitter. Our Instagram is probably the best.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for being on. We appreciate your time very much. And if you guys want to find any of our old episodes, you can find them online at thespinaxis.com.
Take care.